Hi, welcome to the Dr. Lisa Solsenti podcast, and I am Dr. Lisa. And today we're going to talk about what are food sensitivities. I know I've mentioned them in some of our podcasts before this, so now I finally want to jump into them. I know this is one of the most exciting topics, and again, a very common question that I get is, what is a food sensitivity? Is it a food allergy? And how do I know if I have one? And I think the other question, once people know if they have food sensitivity, is what do I do from that point on? So there's a few questions here to unravel, but I'd like to just begin with what a food allergy is, what a food sensitivity is, and what a food intolerance is, because the language that we use in this, I guess, realm is confusing. And it was confusing to me. It's confusing to a lot of practitioners too, until you dive in and learn it. So let me teach it to you. So a food allergy, when we're looking for if a person is allergic to food, we are looking for an antibody called an IgE. And that would tell us that the body's immune system is responding at an allergic level or allergic reaction. So the one difference between the food sensitivity and the food allergy is how we find it in the body, how we scientifically look for it. So we're looking for an IgE antibody for an allergy. The allergy also is different from food sensitivity, is because an allergy is usually immediate. The reaction that the body has, the immune system will respond to it. And it might not be immediate. It could be within a short time frame, but typically it will be soon. So, and many of us know this, right? When you have a food allergy to milk or to nuts, that's like two common ones that we know. But it could be to a fruit or something like that. You might feel your tongue get puffy, your lips get puffy. You might feel an itchy tongue. Some people get itchy skin. Sometimes immediately you'll see some hives or a rash form. And God forbid if you had trouble breathing or an anaphylactic shock. So it's at a bit of immediate immune system. And from what I understand from my training is that a lot of it comes from the mast cell. So that's the primary response system. And there is a histamine dump there too, and a histamine response system. So that's a food allergy. You pretty much know there's different levels. So when you get allergy testing and we run the IgE, you can be a mild allergy. You can have a moderate level. You can have a very high severe level. So there are different, pain points and allergic reaction levels to this. So a food sensitivity is we're looking at how the food, the body is responding from the mucosal lining in the gut primarily. So it's more of the mucosal cells in the gut. And we're looking for an antibody, which would be an IgG. And we also look at an IgA, which is showing us reactivity that food could damage the mucosal lining to the gut. So food sensitivities, you're looking at how food can possibly damage the mucosal, the cell lining of the gut, which is creating a very permeable gut, a very weaker gut. And that's where this term leaky gut comes in from, which we talked about in the podcast. If you don't know what a leaky gut is, please listen to some of the podcasts before this one, because I go into it well in depth. But so food sensitivity is that the proteins in the foods, the body's attacking those, and it will give off an IgG and an IgA to those foods that you're sensitive to. And what we're looking for is mucosal gut line damage. Now, the symptoms that you would see typically aren't really immediate right when you eat the foods. I mean, again, it could be a short time frame, but typically what we see is a longer time frame reaction. And that's the tricky part about food sensitivities in my training, and what I clinically see and what I've personally tried to figure out with my own children and my own self, is that you could eat something, let's say a sundae, and maybe have the reaction or the effect of the food sensitivity on like a Tuesday or Wednesday. So a lot of times it was very hard for me to try to figure out, oh, let's say I ate something and then I had a stomach ache. I would always think it's the thing I ate right before. But so you would eliminate maybe that thing before. Let's say you had milk, right? And then you have a stomach ache, and then I do a food sensitivity test and you're not really reacting to milk. You're going to say, that's weird. That doesn't make sense, because it might not be the food that you just ate, with food sensitivity. Typically with a food allergy it is, and typically with a food intolerance it is. So it's tricky, right? This is a tricky topic. So let's talk about food intolerance. A food intolerance is, think of the food, you're eating it and it hits your stomach, it hits your small intestine, and that's where, you know, digestion is going to actually begin in the mouth, but then when it gets to the stomach, it's going to start breaking down this food, right? These proteins. And so what your body does is it uses acids, it uses bile acids, it uses enzymes, and so it starts the digestion process, the actual physical breaking down of food. And if you're lacking an enzyme to a specific protein in the food, you may have difficulty breaking that food down, breaking that food apart. So this is a food intolerance, which is really a digestion issue, a physical digestion issue. And typically what we do have a stool test that tests for the acid levels in your stomach, and we can see if we think you need a digestive enzyme and stuff like that. So we do look at this area, but it's not a specific test that runs all the enzymes. So there is a food allergy, a food sensitivity, and a food intolerance. Three different ways that you could really react to food and your body's like driving you crazy or not making you feel good based on food. And the question I typically get is, can you have a food allergy and not a food sensitivity? Or can you have a food intolerance and not a food allergy? Or do you have, once you have one, you have all of them? The answer is you can have one, but not the others. So you can have a sensitivity and not an allergy and not an intolerance. Or you could have an allergy and a food sensitivity and not an intolerance. Or you could have an intolerance and not a food sensitivity and not an allergy. So it can keep going, right? You can mix and match those. There's never, you have one and you have them all. So that answers that question. So now with the remaining time, as you know, I promise to keep these short, concise, and jam-packed. So I want to go back to food sensitivity. I really think when I explain food sensitivity, I need to define those three terms so you understand. So food sensitivity is, as I mentioned, when you eat the food, the immune system, the body, right, is going to respond by attacking the protein in the food that it doesn't do well with. And it comes from the mucosal line. And majorly, that's what we're looking at, is looking for this mucosal damage. So that's the food sensitivity. And when we run this test, we have a blood test that does this. You're looking at over 180 foods. We could actually run up to 209, depending upon what we order. And we do two things. We look at the profiles, and we also break them down to food groups, which I love. So we're looking at dairy. And we also look at the two main proteins in dairy, like beta casein and caseomorphin. But we can look at goat's milk, cow's milk, and if we run it further, we could do sheep's milk and buttermilk and things like that. We could do whey, we could do yogurt. So you're looking at the main proteins in this foods. And the question is, does the patient's body attack the food from the gut level? And what I'm looking for in this test is I look at the IgGs and the IgAs. And if you're sensitive, if you're having this food trigger attack, we will see the IgA, let's say to whey, if you had a whey food sensitivity, I would see the whey protein IgAs or IgGs quite high. And that's how I would know that your body's struggling with this specific food. And so the food test goes on to 180 foods, and we can do up to 209 if depending upon what panel we buy. But here's the thing, is there's fish, right? So you're going through catfish, codfish, salmon, trout, perch, tuna, you get the idea, right? Eel, flounder, sole. And then we look at meats. We look at beef, chicken, eggs, lambs, porks, duck, goose, whatever, veal. We go through all the shellfish, mollusks, legumes, spices. We do nuts. And again, this is the food sensitivity. So you might not have a nut allergy. You maybe ran that with your allergist and you're like, oh, I'm fine with nuts. But if you have a food sensitivity, then you have an issue within your digestive tract in the gut. And we look at seeds and fruits and vegetables. And we also get into the grains, which is quite an interesting area. I already explained in the podcast before this about gluten and wheat and the importance of knowing if you have a food sensitivity to that. But and how wheat has so many different components to it that it's very, very, very crucial. I'm going to mention this because it really is. It's very crucial to do a thorough, complete panel of wheat and not just run a very general wheat panel. A lot of times wheat comes up under the radar in many tests and just comes up as you don't have a reaction to it. But it's actually not true. There's so many components to wheat. There's so many proteins because of gluten. You really want to dig and do a very thorough gluten and wheat panel, which is the panel I explained before this podcast. So I don't want to spend too much time on it here. But in this one, we do look at, what I love is we look at the grains, right? So we're not looking at the wheat protein. We're not looking at the gluten protein. We're looking at the main proteins of, let's say, something like corn, right? Or let's say we're looking at something like brown rice, or we're looking at rye, or we're looking at oats. And these are really important because we're looking at other grains. We're looking at their main proteins, right? Maybe we're looking at barley, right? So we're not focusing so hard on the gluten because we already did that in the other panel. Here we want to say, and this is the important part, is this alternative for this person? Is this gluten-free containing grain or this grain that has gluten okay? And I love this food sensitivity test because I can put somebody on a gluten-free diet and say, okay, you know what? That means you can eat brown rice, you can have corn, you can have millet, right? You could have arrowroot, you can have tapioca, you can have amaranth. But the question is, or you can have oats, right? But the question will be, does the body attack that alternative also? So that's really, really important. That's what I love about this test, because as a nutritionist, I don't want to put somebody on something that's an alternative and that's just as, I guess, dangerous or, you know, serious as the original. Another example is, if you can't have cow's milk, how does the patient do with almonds? Do they attack almonds at a high level? Do they have a food sensitivity to almonds? Do they have a food sensitivity to coconut? Do they have a sensitivity to soy? Do they have a sensitivity to rice? Because as a nutritionist, if somebody has a reaction to dairy, you might want to put them on almond milk. You might want to put them on coconut milk. You might want to put them on rice milk, soy milk. So again, are the alternatives that you're going to, whether your nutritionist is doing it or you've read something and you feel that this is better, or you're doing a diet program that you love, is the alternative really safer? And this is really crucial. This food sensitivity test we run gives us so much information. I have patients that come to me and they might be like vegetarian, or they could be keto, or they could be paleo. And they're like, I really love the diet, but I'm not feeling well and I don't want to give it up. And I'm just so worried I'm going to have to. The beauty of this food sensitivity test is that we are going to look at the diet that you love, and we're going to find out what foods within that diet are your culprits, are your food triggers. What foods within the diet that you love is your body attacking? And those are called food triggers. We are going to remove those. So I've had plenty of girls come to me that love to be vegetarian or they love paleo, and we just clean that up. We just get the food triggers out from that diet, and they can still stick with how they're eating. They just have to avoid the culprits. And sometimes you're thinking you're eating something super healthy, like coconut or coconut milk, or like ketos. We do have another test that I don't have on this podcast. Maybe I'll actually, now that we're talking about it, I'll make it the next podcast. But it's food additives, and we look at the alcohol sugars, right? So you're going to like get away from sugar. You're going to try to do alcohol sugars. And then if you're attacking those, they're not the best alternative for you. So this test is phenomenal. You'll love it, because we've tried before lab testing. I did just leaky gut diets with people. We just did diets because there was no blood work. And then the first blood work that came my way was running vitamin testing, which is another podcast we'll talk about. And so I was doing vitamin testing for a long time. When I came out of school, I was always doing cardiac panels, thyroid panels, hormone panels. But then it got into the vitamin testing. And then what I got blessed was with, now we can, food sensitivity came my way. And my lab rep was like, you're not going to believe this, but you don't have to do food eliminations, which that was really hard and almost impossible because of cross reactions, and because foods take so long with food sensitivities, they can take long to react to. And so what we used to do was like, let's take wheat out for 2 weeks, 3 weeks straight, and then put it back in and see if you respond. But the trick here is that these antibodies, they can actually stay within the system for 3 to 3 months, maybe 4 months. So we have to remove the food trigger for about 3 months to actually clear this. So the elimination diet that we did prior that we learned years and years ago, it's not as effective as giving yourself, you know, giving your arm out, getting some blood taken from you and letting them run this panel, looking at IgGs and IgAs to over 180 foods and saying, hey, these are the ones in the red. These are the ones you have to take out. And let's do this for about 3 months and your gut is going to do so much better. So a lot of these symptoms actually start going away. And then the next phase would be to focus on repairing the damage that the food sensitivities caused. Really quick, as I wrap this up, I want you to remember that what a food sensitivity does is your body's attacking the protein in the food, right, from the gut mucosal lining. And when it does that, it gives off histamine. So you might not have the anaphylactic, but you still can have reactions with a lot of mucus, a lot of reflux. You can have a little of the asthma. That's still that mucusy reaction, that histamine reaction. And it also gives off what's called cytokines. They're inflammatory particles. And I tell people to think of them as like little Pac-Man, so you can visually understand. And those can damage the cell wall of the gut lining. And I talked about this in the other podcast of what is a leaky gut. And we talked about zonulin and actin. So if you're curious of how the gut wall gets damaged and how we find that out, go back to that podcast, what is a leaky gut? All right. So that is about food sensitivity. I think the next one's going to be food additives since I brought that up. And that's really fun too, because we get into a lot of things that are added to foods. Like we talked about xylitol, and gives you a little more clarity. All right. So take care and we'll see you at the next podcast.